Welcome to the IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast for couples who struggle with infertility and want to fulfill their dreams of becoming parents. In this podcast, you'll learn actionable strategies to deal with infertility from Dr. Michael Chapman, or Prof as he's affectionately known. Prof is the co-founder of IVF Australia and is a leading Australian infertility specialist who has helped over 3,000 couples realise their dreams of becoming parents. To access previous episodes packed with ideas, solutions and tips that actually work, head over to Dr. Chapman's IVF podcast on iTunes. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him, michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.
That first cry of a baby born after the long journey of IVF remains one of the most beautiful experiences in the world. As an obstetrician and an IVF specialist, I've had the privilege of experiencing this over many thousands of times in my long career, but I still remain moved by each baby's first cry. It signifies the end of a long journey and the beginning of a new life. This is Professor Michael Chapman, co-founder of IVF Australia and host of the IVF Journey podcast. Thanks for tuning in. To access all the previous episodes, head over to my website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu. You'll also be able to find the various services that we provide at IVF Australia. Today we're going to talk about genetic testing and infertility. Probably the greatest advance in science in the last decade has been our ability to look at the genetics of the human. The implications of this advance are immense and do relate to infertility. But just to tell a little bit of the story of this advance, the Human Genome Project, which the United States and other governments got together in the 80s to do, was to map the genetic makeup of a human, to map the thousands of genes, the millions of gene sequences that make up a human. It took over 5 years and over $100 million to map the first human genetic makeup. Today, science has advanced so quickly that with a machine on the bench of a laboratory and a chip costing in the order of $200, we can do the same thing, map the whole human genome in less than 2 hours. The implications of knowing the genetic makeup of an individual are immense. It allows us to see potential prediction of cancer in the future. It allows us to exclude embryos that are abnormal in the genetic testing process. So this genetic testing that we're now capable of doing has a variety of impacts in the area of reproduction, in particular in relation to infertility. What we know and increasingly are aware of is that the majority of embryos created in nature and in the laboratory are abnormal, and that abnormality rate rises with age. What we can do today is to take a few cells from a day 5 embryo and look at the genetic makeup of the embryo. By doing this, we can select those embryos with a normal chromosome set. Our experience now tells us that at the age of 30, a woman on average is likely to have normal embryos in about 60% of these tests. But by the time she's 35, that normality rate has dropped to 25 to 30%. By 40, there are only 10% of the embryos that are normal from a genetic perspective. And by 45, it's down to 1 or 2%. This abnormality rate explains why fertility declines with age. Eggs do get fertilized
in older women, but the embryos that they produce are genetically less likely to be normal the older she gets. And therefore, implantation won't occur, or if implantation does occur, miscarriages occur. It also explains why Down syndrome is more common the older women get. The background genetic abnormality rates of all the chromosomes increase, including chromosome 21. The impact of undertaking testing is that we can be more selective in picking a normal embryo and therefore improve pregnancy rates. And the evidence is pretty clear that if we put back a genetically normal embryo, live birth rates move, even in younger women, from the order of 30 to 35% to 50 to 60%. It's not the whole story, but it certainly is a substantial reason why untested embryos do not result in a pregnancy in the majority of cycles. So why don't we do genetic testing on all embryos that we're going to replace? There are a few hurdles. The technology has reduced in price over time, but it's still relatively expensive. The capacity of our embryologists to undertake the biopsies is limited because it requires specific skills. The embryologists are undertaking these procedures with increasing ability, but it still impairs the possibility of a successful pregnancy. There are also questions about the accuracy of the biopsy process. What we do is on day 5 of embryo development, called the blastocyst stage, we take out some cells from the area of the embryo that will become the placenta. And unfortunately, in a percentage of cases, those cells are not representative of the baby itself. So errors can occur. Or more confusingly, we get multiple different answers from the same embryo of normality or abnormality. This is called mosaicism. Our knowledge in relation to these embryos is increasing, but still there is great concerns about putting back embryos that are not perfectly normal genetically. Into the future, one can see that we will be undertaking biopsy on most embryos that we put back, because it really does improve pregnancy rates in those patients. The other area that genetic testing of embryos has now become possible are specific diseases that are handed down from generation to generation. So simple things like hemophilia is carried on in males, or it becomes obvious in males. It's actually not carried in males. It's actually they can die of the disease and are affected by the disease. So by genetically testing the embryos and only putting back female embryos, we can avoid that life-threatening disease. Diseases that have a specific genetic makeup, we can now go searching for that particular gene in each embryo. And if the abnormality of that gene is present, we won't put that embryo back. Predisposition to cancer can now be diagnosed in the embryo, and we can avoid putting that embryo back. In breast cancer, there's good evidence that the BRCA gene is a source of high risk for breast cancer and other cancers. So women who have had cancer themselves, or their mothers or their family have cancer, and they are carriers of the BRCA gene, those women can produce embryos. We can then exclude that from the next generation. It's a bit of the brave new world that we're going to have to face. The ethical dilemmas that we face are just beginning to dawn. Do we really want to know that the embryo we put back has a higher risk of getting diabetes at the age of 60, or that they have a higher risk of heart disease, because we've shown that having a particular gene is a predisposition for those diseases? Perhaps we should, because then we can take action over a lifetime through lifestyle or dietary changes to avoid disease. Or do we just throw that embryo away and start with one without those abnormalities? The problem is there are multiple genes and multiple abnormalities. I doubt that we'll ever get to the point of selecting embryos that are absolutely perfect. There's no way it can happen. So genetic testing certainly has changed the world. In relation to fertility, it certainly adds another dimension. It does provide a mechanism for improving success rates, but it does open up a bag of worms in terms of the ethical dilemmas that we're going to face into the future.
And don't forget that you can access all the previous episodes by going to our website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu.
Thank you for listening to The IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast which helps couples negotiate their way through the IVF journey, all the way to parenthood. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.